Prakritir guna sammudhaha
Sajjante guna karmasu
Sajjante guna karmasu
Tana kritsna vidho mandan
Tana kritsna vidho mandan
Kritsna vinna vichalayet
Kritsna vinna vichalayet Prakritehe guna sammudhaha sajjante gunakarmasu tan akritsna viddha mandan kritsna vit na vichalayet. In the previous verse, he's talking about the tattvavit. The tattvavit is the one who's very clear in terms of the activities of the gunas and the related karmas, knowing that everything about you, your upadis, this body, mind, sense organs, are all the vikaras, are all the modifications of prakriti. They're all modifications of sattva, rajas, and tamas, right? Again, I think I mentioned the best thing, way to understand it, is to understand the dream and to recognize that everything about the dream character, every single thing, the knownness, the mind, the ability to know, your sense organs, your organs of action, your prana, your body, and the whole world that you find yourself in, all is made of maya. It's all a manifestation of maya. Maya is mitya. It means the maya has no ability to change or touch yourself in any way, because from its own standpoint, it has no being other than yourself. It's like a shadow. It's like walking along. It's a kind of an example that's used. You're walking along, you know, and your shadow's just walking along with you. Now your shadow says, "Let's take a break." Can't do it, right? Cannot do it. Different order of reality. So what if the maya, the prakriti, you know, started to decide that it wanted myself to get a little bit more involved in the situation? Let's have the atma be a little bit more involved, you know? Let it just show some emotion or something, you know? Cannot do it. Different order of reality. My mind can show emotion. My body can be awake or it can be tired. I can be hungry. I can have high energy or low energy. I can have raga dvesha. I can even have, instead of raga dvesha, binding raga dvesha, I can have non-binding raga dvesha. I can be ignorant. The prakriti I'm talking. The prakriti, I can be ignorant. I can have self-ignorance. I can have moksha. Do you think that Brahman has moksha or bondage or liberation? Does the Atma have bondage or liberation? Oh, it has, no, it cannot. It's non-dual. For me, I just simply am. The one who has a problem now is the one that exists within duality, with part of the prakriti. So it's like you ask, you know, in seeing the dream character is bound, you know, and becomes a mumukshu, and wants to have atmajnanam, wants to have self-knowledge, you know. So now, who is it that wants to have self-knowledge? The self, the atma, from whom the whole dream has come, or is it the dream character that needs the self-knowledge? The dream character, the sattva, the dream mind with the sattva sense organs, it's that one that needs, that feels bound, and needs to gain knowledge, right? And what does it mean to gain knowledge for that one? In one sense, what it means is to recognize this is all prakriti, including this is all maya, including my body, my mind, and my sense organs, that really totally depends on me, the one from whom the dream has come, for its being, and it has no, because a different order of reality, it has no way of harming me, hurting me, touching me, changing me in any way. And so therefore, in fact, I am absolutely free. This self, which is the self of the body, mind, sense organs, you know, it's just a two-way type of relationship. The pot is dependent on the clay. For the clay, there is no pot. Right? Where's the pot for the clay? There's only clay. The pot is completely mithya. It has no being. This creation is like that. That's why it totally depends on me for its being, but I don't depend on it at all. So I am ever free. I am ever a karta. I've never been a doer at any time. And so liberation, knowledge and liberation depends upon, really, it is the problem of the jiva. It's the problem of this person. And the solution for this problem is not taking place from the standpoint of the Atma, because from the standpoint of me, there is no problem. So the solution is taking place from within the creation. So Krishna himself taking a body, is that Atma or Mithya? Is Ishwara Atma or Mithya? Ishwara. Is Maya Atma or Mithya? Maya is Mithya. So what is Ishwara? Ishwara is also Mithya, but Ishwara is the total Maya manifesting as the entire creation. So from Ishwara's standpoint, it's the total expression of my being, but there's no ajnanam, so there's no problem. This is my expression, that's all. There's no raga, dvesha, there's nothing that I'm not. For Ishwara, there's no problem. There's no ajnanam, there's no ignorance. But look at the situation for everybody within the creation, with limited upadis. The same maya, the same self, the same relationship between the maya and the self. It's not like your upadi is maya, but not mithya, and Ishwara's upadi is maya and mithya. No, the whole thing is mithya. The whole thing depends on my being without changing me in any way. But so that being the case, all of the prakriyas, all of the teaching methodologies, even the prasada buddhi, the way to handle these mithya desires are mithya. The binding desires are mithya. The non-binding desires are mithya. You know? The prasada buddhi is mithya. Because the whole thing is existing within the creation, you know? But then, it's very nice of Bhagawan, it's very nice that even though this whole thing is mithya, and we're all mithya, but here we are, suffering. The suffering is mithya too. Mithya suffering, mithya bondage, mithya liberation. And I'm glad that since I am mithya and I have mithya suffering, that there is mithya liberation, and this is the way to go about that. How to get out of this duality that we find ourselves subjected to. We don't really have to get out of duality. We have to recognize that in fact it is mithya, means that it has no being apart from me, cannot change me in any way, and the ananda that I'm running after in this creation is my own swarupa. It is my own nature. There is no objectified ananda. See, that's interesting. We can objectify everything else. You can objectify your emotions, you can objectify your hardship. Anything that exists within the prakriti, you can objectify. Subject-object, see or seen. You know? But what can't you objectify is your being. The conscious being that you are, which is consciousness, the knownness which the whole creation enjoys. You can objectify the objects that you superimpose the knownness on, like this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known, but try to objectify the knownness itself, that everything equally enjoys. This is known, this is known, this is known. What about isness? No. You get to experience being as a projection on all of these things. This is, this is, this is, this is, this is. So all of you are carriers of being. You're the being characters, carriers. You're the knownness carriers. But try to look at being. Try to objectify being. You can't. You are it. Try to objectify consciousness. You can't. You are it. Try to objectify ananda, or that well-being, that which is my swarupa. We can objectify all kinds of bliss states, but those come and go. And those are vrittis, shanta vrittis. Try to objectify me, the wholeness of my own being, the beloved nature of my own being, the love, that which is the absolute of my own being. Try to objectify it. All you can do is project it on somebody, and then just like you project the isness on somebody or the knownness on somebody, you project the beloved nature on somebody. And that's where the raga dvesha comes in. Because it is beloved. It is beloved. I must have it. To be whole, to be complete. That's the samsara. But that samsara, I'm projecting something that in fact is never objectified. Even if you say, I just love that person so much. That person makes me so happy. And what if I were to ask you, do you see the happiness over there on that person? Are you experiencing the happiness on that person? You know, like you're experiencing what they look like, you're experiencing what they're wearing, you're experiencing what they're saying, you're experiencing the tone of their voice, you're experiencing their graciousness. Are you experiencing their happiness? Can you see it? Can you see it? Is that why you feel happy when you're around them? Because you're looking at their happiness. No, it's because they make me happy. It's my happiness. It's not an object. That is my swarupa. That is who I am. This me has got, through viveka, has got to be owned. I have to own myself. It has to be extracted. This very thorough projection has to be extracted from the creation and re-owned. I have to, it shouldn't be a difficult thing. It's just, oh yeah. Actually, no, I can't look at ananda. I can be ananda. I can't look at existence. I am existence. I can't look at self-evident consciousness. I am self-evident consciousness. Of course. But, you know, lifetimes and lifetimes of ajnana. So it's for us, we are, not my being, not me, but the upadis. And everything I seek and everything I do is a play of the gunas. It's a play, it's just a play of the prakriti, the sattva, rajas, and tamas. The very material that projects this is creating a play. There's a drama going on here. Because there's living beings who have sense organs and have organs of actions and enjoy conscious existence and conscious being and ananda. I know what ananda is, and so I'm trying to always keep myself, you know, full of that. Let me just be love. Let me just be wholeness. Let me just be happy. And then we realize that we can't do it. We can try to do it, but it keeps slipping out of our grasp. And the reason that it keeps slipping out of our grasp is because conditions are continually changing. And if I'm dependent upon conditions, then it will slip. If I am not dependent upon conditions, any conditions, it will not slip. It never slipped really in the first place. But from the standpoint of my mind kept slipping and creating dukkha vrittis, all prakriti, you know. And so I need to recognize the one who is never changing no matter what the conditions. My love, my wholeness is not conditional. It's not dependent on anything. my body is, my mind is, my vrittis are, my sukha vrittis are, my nirvikalpa samadhi vrittis are, my savikalpa samadhi vrittis are, all meditative states are, because they are different degrees of shanta vritti, all of which I love. I love my shanta vrittis, but I'm not a shanta vritti. The atma is not a shanta vritti. Because then, otherwise, every time the shanta vritti goes, I go, I'm gone. Yeah? But I'm not gone, I'm just now illumining a non-shanta vritti. Disappointed, you know, and full of sorrow. That's why shanta vritti is gone. Oh, this whole thing, it's just the dance of the gunas. And so the dance of the prakriti, the dance of maya, sattva, rajas, and tamas, all of modifications that the sattva, rajas, and tamas goes through in the display of this creation. So here he says, after saying the tattva vit, the one who really understands this dance between the gunas and karmas, and the gunas playing within the gunas acting upon the gunas, that one, you know, doesn't feel bound. The only reason that one doesn't feel bound is because the gunas belong to Maya, not to me. I'm not bound. The gunas are in a continual dance. I accept that. I take that dance as Ishwara. That dance is Bhagawan. And I accept that dance with prasada buddhi. I don't ask Ishwara to be different. I don't say, please, let me be an exception. Just do the pretty dances around me. Mm-hmm. Just do the really beautiful dances around me so that I can always be, you know, lost in my ananda. You know? And Bhagavan goes, what? I never heard of anything like that. I don't think that's possible. That's not possible. Okay, so now, so the jnanis have no problem because there's everything's a non-binding desire because I don't expect Maya or the gunas or Ishwara to be different. And I don't see that aviveka is no longer there where I think that I've projected my ananda onto Maya, you know, and then I'm running around trying to get it back. That's gone. It's gone. But it's gone. It's gone from my mind, from the ajnanam in my mind. It's never been gone from me. I've always been fine. Myself is always fine. It has no choice but to be fine. It's not an object. It's not one of the gunas. It's not part of the dance. So that means this is what it is. I let it be. I look prayerfully, appreciating Bhagawan. What an incredible creation it is. It's fine. Let the gunas do their thing. It's fine with me. I don't have binding desires because that would be asking them to do something that they really can't do. Expecting them to do something that they can't do, you know, that nobody can do. Nobody, it's not a snapshot. The creation is not a snapshot. Snapshot, you know what that is? That's it. There's the picture, now we have it. Okay, so like when we're getting our picture taken, it's like, okay, everybody smile. Okay, that's it. Let's make that the snapshot. That's Bhagawan right there. Don't change. Okay, like that. No. We can't do that. So here, in this verse, he says, what about, you know, the ajnanis, you know, who are bound? What's happening there? So he says, prakritehe gunasamuddaha, those who are completely, the muddha means deluded. Sam means samyak muddha, completely deluded. Because it's not partial. If it's partial, you could go over into that little corner that's not deluded and look at the delusion and take care of it. That's not what it is. Every part of your upadhi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, there's nothing left out in terms of upadhis, you know. Every part of it is deluded. The ajnanam is not partial, you know. The atma is not deluded, but the atma's not doing anything. It's just there illumining the whole thing innocently. Ah, no problem. For me, there is no problem. But the dance, it's a dance of delusion from the standpoint of all of the jivas whose minds are not sarvajñaha, all-knowing like Ishvara. The minds are limited. And so that limited mind, just like in the dream, is looking at the world from this limited standpoint of body, mind, sense organs, looking around at the dream, gunas responding to gunas. That's all it is. So here he says, those who are deluded by the gunas of prakriti, by the vikaras, by the modifications of prakriti, means the body, mind, sense organs, the karya karana sangata. That's the vikaras of prakriti that we're talking about. All of these upadis, they are sajjante gunakaramasu. They are, you know, completely attached. They feel, they have all of their binding desires are there in reference to guna and karma. All of the actions and all of the gunas, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, the pursuit of the sense organs, the sense organs which are gunas, going after the sense objects which are gunas, right? So it's totally deluded by this dance of the gunas, which is carrying the projection of me, of my being. So of course they are bound. They are bound because this creation enjoys me for its being, but I am not able to be objectified within it. So I don't know that. And so enjoying me, they are running after each other continually. So somebody has to intervene here. We need a serious intervention. And the only one that really can do this serious intervention is Bhagavan. Because how can the gunas who are moving within the gunas make any kind of intervention? They don't have anything outside of themselves. It's not like there's some Archimedean point that's looking from a distance, say, oh, look at what's really happening to you. There's nobody over there outside of this thing to look and say, look at what's really happening. Do you see the dance that you're doing? There's no outside, because your sense organs and your mind themselves are made of they also are prakriti. So they're only experiencing what they can experience, what their means of knowledge are. It's always only within prakriti. And they'll say, the mind, which is prakriti, is sattva guna, the mind has incredible experiences. We love those experiences, but I, the mind, am having those experiences, right? I mean, who else is having them? But you see that? Me, the mind. I, who am the mind. That's the ahankara. The fact that I say I, the mind, is because of the ahankara, which is also prakriti, right? That's a vritti. That's the ahankara vritti. The ahankara, buddhi, manas, chitta. So the ahankara, this I notion, is identifying with the experience that you are now having. You are now having this experience. You didn't have it before. And so the mind says, oh, I'm having this wonderful experience. Please stay. Ah, okay. Yeah, it went. When can I have that again? When can I have that again? I need that. Right? If I know I am only that, then I can love those experiences. If I think I am that my mind has now become that for the moment, I have become the real me, for the moment, and the real me is gone, I have to somehow get it back. That's not fun. You know, I have to recognize this Maya Sattva mind that is illumined by awareness needs to have a mirror held up to it, an Upanishad held up to it, to make it recognize the nature of the one who illumines these sublime and awful experiences. Who is the me that is always present, that must be realized? If it's not realized, then the gunas are playing within the gunas, and my sattva, rajas, and tamas, this karya, karana, sangata, this body, mind, sense organs, becomes really sad when things are not working out for me in terms of my mental emotional state. If things are not working out in the world, sometimes they don't work out at all, then I'm fine. Then good. Okay, there's no problem. In fact, I'm so happy that I'm still fine in spite of these things not working out. But that's just because I had some kind of non-binding desire in reference to that thing working out or not working out. I had a little karma yoga there without even knowing it. You know, thing didn't work out, and I'm not upset at all. How mature I'm becoming, you know. But that's not really karma yoga. That's just, you know, having some maturity in life and having a non-binding desire. But binding desires are just not okay. It's a binding desire. It means my ananda is dependent on it. That's not going to work. And so with these binding desires where my ananda is dependent, you know, because it's happening because of my delusion around the play of the gunas, then what he says is, that Krishna says, those people who have these binding desires who are just living out a life within the prakriti, okay? Tan akritsna viddha mandan kritsnavitna vichalyet. So those people who are akritsnavit mandan means they don't have manda, means they don't have viveka. They don't have viveka between what is satyam, my own nature, and what is mithya. Or they don't understand the play of the gunas. They don't have that. Their knowledge is not, it's akritsnavit. It's not whole. It's not complete. So those people who are avivekis, they don't have that discrimination, mandan. The kritsnavit, the one who does have knowledge, who is clear, who does have that viveka, who knows what's going on, that person, not vichaliate, don't disturb. Again, he's saying this two or three times now. Bhagavan is saying this. Don't disturb, don't confuse the people who don't know, the people who are still playing within the gunas. Don't confuse them. If they're a mumukshu, if they're questioning, if they want knowledge and they want you to teach them, then you should teach them. They want to know. But how can you tell somebody who takes themselves to be this body, mind, sense organs, you just give everything up and take sannyasa? How will that help? That won't help at all because they don't have any knowledge. So they're going to go sit in a tree and meditate. What will they meditate on? Really, honestly, what will they meditate on? Like that story I told you. Now what? Now what? You know? How will meditation take care of this fundamental problem that everything about me, in terms of body, mind, sense organs, all of my notions, all of my buddhi itself, is a product of ajnana? Its only means of knowledge are to work within that world of maya. How am I going to know that I am the self of the whole thing? You know? Go meditate. You know? Don't do any karmas. Karmas are useless. They just keep you in the maya. If you do karmas, you're just playing the game. Don't do any karmas. Take sannyasa, go meditate. What horrible advice. Oh my God. Because it won't work. It won't work at all. You know, you can if you have some shraddha, misplaced shraddha, that's why shraddha is Ishwara Anugraha. It's just the grace of Bhagavan. You have some misplaced shraddha, they say, go meditate, go to the forest, meditate, get away from all of this. And you go and you meditate year after year after year. Very disappointing. Time lost. Well, Swamiji says, don't waste your time. Be careful. Anyway, let's go to the next verse.
Mai sarvani karmani.
Sanyasya
dhyatma chetasa.
Nirashir nirmamo bhutva.
Yasva vikatachu. Yudhyasva vigata jvaraha
Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya adhyatma chetasa Nirashir nirmamaha bhut Nirashihi nirmamaha bhutva Yudhyasva vigata jvaraha. So now he's getting back to now Arjuna. He has something for Arjuna now. So how to get out of this? How to get out of this situation? Because Arjuna asked Krishna for knowledge. But how can you even have a mind within all of the prakriti, you know, a mithya mind within the mithya prakriti, how to have a mind which is even available for this knowledge? Because the mind is trapped within, really trapped by your sense organs and by your raga dveshas within this creation, which is really just a manifestation of the gunas. It's a manifestation of prakriti, but everything about you is included in that manifestation, except for the atma, which is not objectifiable for you to even know. You don't even know it, because whatever is sattva totally enjoys that conscious being. It says, to the extent that, unlike the chair, to the extent that it will say, I am the conscious being and I am sometimes happy when I fulfill a desire. That's true, right? And so how now to get the mind to withdraw, you know, in a gentle, humane way, to get this mind to withdraw its projection. That's what's happening with this Karma Yoga Buddhi, the Prasada Buddhi. We are pulling back the projection. And we can pull back that projection because we are a mumukshu, because we are gaining knowledge, because we have Shraddha in Ishwara. There is no Ishwara. Sometimes Westerners will say, this was a while ago with Swamiji. They're really serious. They would say, Swamiji, I'm really understanding this knowledge, Swamiji, and it's really wonderful. But, Swamiji, do we really have to accept Ishwara? Because God, you know, God has kind of a bad rap. The word God for many, many people is just not carrying any sense of Shraddha or any sense of commitment or any sense of relationship. Do we really have to accept God, Swami? That's why Buddhism is so popular, because you don't have to deal with God, you know. So you really have to accept God. So I'm just say something like, don't worry about it right now. Just put it for the side. Put it to the side now. Don't think about it right now. Because basically when that question comes, you don't really even know what you mean by the word at all. All you have is your conditioning. So do I really have to accept this God that I have this horrible negative conditioning over? Do we have to even think about that? Could I be liberated without having to deal with God? You know, that's actually what is being asked. I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't believe in it. You know, it's not a good experience for me. I really want self-knowledge. Can we just leave God out of the picture? That's what it is. So Swamiji just says, you know, be patient. We'll see. So here he says, so now how to pull the mind, to release the mind from this sangha, you know, these binding desires. How to release that mind, because otherwise the mind is always extrovert trying to figure out how to become happy. So what Krishna says here, and he's been teaching this all along, right, the whole chapter, is it's, So now Arjuna, he says, Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya, having renounced, having given up all karmas, all your karmas, which means which all are you for your karmas, you consider yourself to be, you know, a karma palahetuhu, one who is responsible for the results of your karma. I am doing this karma so that I can get this. That's why I'm doing it. So I take myself as responsible for these results, which is the reason I'm doing the karma. I am doing these rituals. Even I'm doing these rituals so I can get to Swargaloka. I'm doing these rituals so that I can get a better next birth. I'm doing this tapas so that my child will get well. It's always, there's always some sort of raga. So we're changing the ragas. These binding desires we're making into non-binding desires so that I can gain, that's another raga, so that I can gain moksha, which depends upon antakarana shuddhi. Without antakarana shuddhi, without a mind that has shanti, antakarana shuddhi means literally a pure mind, but a pure shanti, antakarana shuddhi means pure, antakarana means mind, like inner antaha karana, inner instrument. A mind, one whose inner instrument, the mind, has a shuddhi. Shuddhi means that it's not running around, it's not running after raga dveshas, you know, it's not running after my likes and dislikes, binding desires, which when they don't work out, create tremendous agitation. The kama, the binding raga dvesha, when it's thwarted, creates krodha, anger. Anger stands for all different types of agitation. If this was swarga loka, if it was heaven, the highest loka, if it was swarga loka, then all of our binding desires would come true. That's why the karmanishtas, people in the first portion of the, the samsaris, they want swarga loka. Of course they want swarga. They'll work for swarga loka. They'll do all kinds of rituals, pour all kinds of money into that, do all kinds of tapas, all kinds of upasanas. Because if I can get to swarga loka, then all of my desires will manifest. Whatever I want. I do that karma to get that? Yes, it works out perfectly. Every single one of them. And so I will become liberated. That is my liberation. The only thing is, I become liberated in the sense that all of my raga dveshas are continually fulfilled immediately, but the swarga itself is time-bound. That's one problem. It's time-bound, because even if you go to heaven and you last there the whole time, when the world comes back into unmanifest condition, then you're back to square one and you have to take another regular birth. So that's going to come to an end. The Swamiji will joke and say, you know, you think that you go to swarga loka and you're going to be there for a really long time and everything's going to be really great for a really, really, really long time, like 400,000 years. I mean, really long time, you know. I'll tell you what the problem is. That long time comes to an end, and pretty soon you only have a week left. You only got 2 days left. You only got 1 day left. It is over, right? Anything time-bound, it's a long time, comes to an end. That's the thing. But another problem is, your desires are satisfied, that's true. The Swamiji will sometimes joke, but there's still this problem of comparison. Like, you have it really nice, and your upadhi and everything is really good, and all the things you want, you're getting, but then you notice that guy over there. And Brahmaji is sitting on his throne. God is sitting on his throne. And all of the people that are there in swarga loka are sitting around, you know, with all love and devotion. Brahmaji is, you know, Hiranyagarbha taking a form. They're sitting around in such absolute love and devotion. But there's a front row. And I'm in the back row. And so my ananda keeps getting shaken just a little bit here and there. So anyway, he jokes on it. Now what Krishna says, mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya, giving up all of these binding desires, all of the karmas, giving them to me how? With that karma yoga buddhi. If I'm a mukshu, as a mamukshu, I'm letting all of these karmas, all of these desires, all of these, whole creation itself be Ishwara. And so I now am only in relationship with Ishwara. That's my primary relationship. And I'm receiving everything that comes my way, the results of all of my actions, with that prasada buddhi, which the prasada buddhi is such a beautiful example, because when you receive when you receive prasad from the temple, it doesn't matter at all to you. This is why it's such a beautiful example. When you receive prasad from the temple, whatever that is, I am so happy to get it. It's Bhagavan. It could be just water, and you don't drop the water on the floor. You know, you put the water, you know, in your neck and your head, and bless yourself with the water. If it's a flower, you would never throw out the flower, you know, or drop it on the ground. You'd put it over your ear, you know. If it's in chandan, you would put the chandas on you and on your neck or whatever. But it's all done, you know, with devotion, with love. And so if I am viewing the whole creation as Ishwara, then I view everything that is coming my way as Ishwara. I look at my life as the prarabdha karma, and I do what is to be done. So Shankara has a nice sentence here. He says, Aham karta Ishwaraya brittavat karomi. He says, you know, he goes, I am the doer. I am the karta, because mukshu is still a karta doer. I do all of these actions. I do all of these things, all of these actions that I do for Bhagawan as a servant. Bhagawan says, this is what it is? Okay, I'll do that. This is your situation? Yes, okay, fine, I'll do that. So I am like a servant to Ishwara, and I love to be a servant. So servant means I do what is there for me to be done. So that's that karma yoga buddhi, the example that he uses. So now he says, having surrendered all karmas to me, given up all karmas to me, adhyatma chetasa, with the buddhi, chetas is the mind, the buddhi, which is adhyatma. It's focused on myself, focused on my knowledge in terms of viveka. Shankara says that adhyatma chetasa is what we call viveka jnanam. With a buddhi that has viveka, means it's a buddhi that can discriminate between dharma and adharma and recognize the source of the ananda is myself. All of these things that are becoming clear because I do shravana, manana, nididhyasana, I'm getting this knowledge. And so with that understanding, I do all of my karmas that are coming my way. Nirashihi niramamaha bhutva. Having become somebody who is free from hope. That doesn't mean... It doesn't mean that. Free from hope, it's really beautiful. I am not bound by my future expectations. It's not that I don't have expectations for the future, but I have that karma yoga buddhi, that prasada buddhi, for those expectations also. Otherwise, you can't say, you can't have any expectations for the future, just live in the present, keep all that out. That's not possible, because what we're doing for now and we're doing for the future, right? If you're doing a work, say you have a job and you're traveling and you have this appointment and that appointment, you're doing things with the future in mind, because the future has to be taken care of in the present also. But so that nirashihi, I am somebody who, you know, am not bound by my expectations for the future because I have that prasada buddhi. Niramama means I am not even thinking really about this is mine and that is mama means mine. I'm without this minus. Not because there's no minus. I mean, these are my clothes and that's my little apartment and this is that and this is that. These things belong to me. But it's totally not the way that I'm thinking. I'm thinking not about what's mine and what's yours, but what is being asked in this situation. When you're really thinking about what's being asked of you in a given situation, this is mine and that is yours, is not usually the issue, you know. when this is mine or this is yours, or, you know, this is my place and I'm setting the rules here and you're encroaching on my place in this way, and I want it to be like that, and I do own the place after all, you know. And you are behaving in my place, in a particular way that is unsatisfactory for me, you know, that's a problem. And that's not usually how we think. At least with that karma yoga buddhi, we're not thinking about me and mine and yours. It's how to handle this situation. Say there's you have these things and this person is doing something or other and it's a problem. How to handle this situation? It's not these are mine, and so you stay over on your side of the you stay over on your side. You keep all of your things together, I will keep all of my things together. When you're on my property, you behave in this way. When I'm on your property, I'll behave in that way. That's not how we think. But this mamatvam, this is something how Duryodhana thinks. Remember, Krishna standing right in the middle of the battlefield, ready to go into war. Duryodhana was all about, this is my kingdom, this is my place. You cannot even have 1 inch of space in my kingdom. He got down to that. Not even an inch. You can't have, they got down to, let us just have one house. You know, because Yudhishthira was the king. And there was this war that took place. They were actually successful. They won the bet and all of this kind of stuff. But Duryodhana would not share mine. It's mine, this is mine, this is mine. You can't have it. So that's why this nirashihi and nirmamatvam is so important here, just because Duryodhana is the absolute opposite of that. So without this fixation on how things are going to work, and without this yours and minus, become like that, Arjuna, he says, and yudyasva vigata jvaraha. May you fight with this attitude. May you fight and be as a vigata jvaraha, one who's not overheating. Jvara means getting a fever. Fever means getting upset. I'm always upset or anxious or agitated, you know, or frustrated or creating a lot of heat for myself. Let that fever go. Be one who's without any fever. Just be objective. Do your duty. Your duty is to fight. Take this teaching that I've taught you and fight. Okay? You go ahead and fight. And so now let's do this one more verse here.
Ye me matamidam nityam.
Anitishtanti manavaha. Shraddhavanto na suyantaha.
Muchyante te pi karma bihi.
Ye te matamidam nityam anutishtanti manavaha. Shraddhavantaha na suyantaha. Muchyante te pi karma bihi.
He says, this teaching that I'm teaching you, this is how he enters in the teaching, this teaching which I'm teaching you, which is karma kartavyam, these karmas that are meant to be done, do those with the prasada buddhi, this karma yoga teaching, along with sapramana, means together with reasoning, with all of the logic, with all of the reasoning why why this should be done. This has all been said. So he says now, that's what Shankara says. So, ye te matamidam nityam anutishtanti manavaha. Those ones who manavaha, those people, those human beings who are manavaha, means they're born of Manu. Manu is the one who writes, is one of the rishis, the first beings, who brings through the Dharma Shastra. So human beings have as natural to them the Dharma Shastra, that's really Ishwara, the laws of Ishwara, actually very the order of Ishwara. But Manu is the one who categorized all of those in a Shastra. So Manavaha, And he becomes one of the fathers of the human race. And so for all of us, Dharma is most important. So he calls humans now Manavaha. So he says, those people born of Manu, bound by the Dharma Shastra, let them nityam anutishtanti, let them always practice, always follow this teaching of mine. Me matamidam, this mata, this teaching, te, me of mine. Let them continually follow it. Let them not veer from this karma yoga buddhi. Because following that dharma, receiving the results with that prasada buddhi is what actually frees a person from karma. So then he says, those people doing that, shraddha vantaha, with shraddha. Shraddha is a wonderful word. Shraddha means, Swamiji will translate it as faith, pending understanding. Means you have the disposition that believes that this shastra is true. And it's got to be something like from past life or some sort of something intuitive, because you have no way to know. Until you know, something tells you, this rings true to me. It rings true. The teacher also has to ring true, as though his or her words are carrying that commitment, carrying that knowledge. It's not just like a book, like some sort of a lecture, you know, repeating the words of somebody else. It's not like that. It's the knowledge is an embodied knowledge. There's a clarity there, and that clarity is passed on to you. And so a person needs to have that shraddha, faith pending understanding. In the Vedas as being scripture, for this is for the Upanishads, in the Vedas as being the scripture, a valid means of knowledge, and that the teacher also knows and knows what she's talking about or what he's talking about. That takes shraddha. That's why Swamiji, or the Shastra itself, says it's Ishwara Nugraha, it's really the grace of God, because you are having Shraddha, you have Shraddha, it's a faith pending understanding, because something inside says, yes, this is it, this is what I need to know, this is what I want to know. And you are willing to commit your time, commit yourself to it, you know? Because you believe, faith-pending understanding, faith-pending understanding that I will gain that knowledge and I will get what I need to know. So let that person have shraddha, because if they don't, shraddhavan means they have shraddha. If they don't have the shraddha, how can they listen? This is knowledge. This isn't telling you to go do this or to go do that. You know, it's giving you. It's not telling you to do anything actually. In terms of the knowledge, it's because what you need to know is already present. That's how knowledge works. Knowledge is not about something that is not there. Knowledge is about something that is already here, that is a fact. And so the knowledge then has to make you see, recognize the fact, because the knowledge is about you, right? So this knowledge, this whole unfoldment, the whole unfoldment of the Upanishads are holding up a mirror to something which actually is. Even the understanding of this karma yoga buddhi, this prasada buddhi, you know, it gives you an attitude, and that attitude works if you do it. We're into karma. But it's explained so clearly with so much reasoning, and so along with the knowledge that you're getting, the seeing, the understanding that you're getting an understanding of how to be with your mind, how to be with the world, how to make these things into non-binding desires, in a way that is such a huge blessing, but it's a karma. In other words, there's an attitude that has to accompany what I'm doing, right? The attitude is knowledge, but then I have to invoke that attitude in reference to the karmas that I'm doing. But so that's why he says in the introduction, sapramanam, this knowledge has been given with so much reasoning, so much understanding. So then he says,
So the one who has that shraddha, let these people continually do this, follow this teaching of mine, which I'm teaching you now. Those people who have shraddha and anasuyantaha, and let them not criticize or cavil or put down the teacher or the teaching. And Swamiji talks about this asuya. It's a type of jealousy. It's one of the bad qualities. It's a type of jealousy. And the jealousy works like this. I see somebody who I look up to and I respect, but I'm jealous of them, and so what my mind does is put them down in this way or that way. I try to put them down, put their knowledge down, put down, criticize what they're doing, criticize them, criticize the person, you know? Not for any valid reason, but just because of jealousy. Jealousy means somehow that person, their strength, their teaching, or whatever, you know, makes me seem small. And so for that reason, I have this asuya, can have this asuya toward the teaching and the teacher. The teaching, I know better. They attend all of this stuff. I know much better. This teacher, he or she is acting like they know something. I don't think so. But it's only because, not because there's any reality for asuya, it's not because there's any reality in that, it's because there's some jealousy. So that's what asuya means. It's that jealousy that causes you to put others down. So let that person have shraddha, let there be no asuya toward the teacher or the teaching, because this is a living tradition. It's not coming out of a book. And so the teacher is the carrier of that tradition. So if you put down the teacher, then at least through that particular teacher, you can't get this knowledge. So in fact, in our tradition in India, this is called Guru Droha. Swamiji Vagishanandi talks about this quite a bit. Guru Droha is considered a huge papa, because Guru Droha means that speaking ill, speaking badly, gossiping negatively about the teacher. Because by doing that, by participating in that type of behavior, that type of, you're destroying kind of the shraddha. You're attacking the shraddha. And so that should never be done. You should not do it for yourself or toward anybody else, because it creates a distance between you and that person. It's just like gossip. Gossip should never be done, really, because when you gossip, you're putting something negative in the mind of another person about that other person. And so it creates a conditioning that maybe then you don't like that other person so much anymore. You don't really respect that other person because you're taking that person's word for it. So what if somebody were to talk negatively about Swamiji, you know? What they're doing is they're ruining their own shraddha, but then they're ruining the shraddha of the other people. And so that shraddha vantaha is so, it's so sacred, because this knowledge has to be, the flow of this knowledge between these two minds, you know, it's like a melding of the minds when this knowledge is taking place. And if there's some droha going on, that melding of the mind can't happen. By melding of the mind, I mean when the knowledge is taking place, there's the teacher's mind and your mind, that's all there is. There's just a union of the knowledge. And the teacher falls away and the student falls away, and the mind is just involved in the teaching, and then the class is over, and now you come back and you're you and the teacher, you know, it's like that. But if that anasuya is there, if that asuya is there, then it compromises terribly the whole teaching. So he brings that out, shraddha and anasuya, let that not be there. And he says, for such a person who follows this clearly, muchante te apikarma bihi. Those people also, not just you, Arjuna, all of those people also, they will be liberated from all of their karmas by this karma yoga buddhi, this prasada buddhi, that then resolves into Atmajnanam. Because remember, there's always the Upayanishtha, Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, the teaching taking place, and there's Upayanishtha, the Antakarana Shuddhi. This Karma Yoga Buddhi is so, so beautiful for gaining the Antakarana Shuddhi you need for this knowledge to just come right in. There's no, it takes no time. Knowledge, self-knowledge takes no time at all. It could do, it's done one, completely finished in one day or 1 hour. Honestly, if that Antakarana Shuddhi is there, we just have issues. We have a lot of raga, dvesha, and all of this kind of stuff, so it takes time. And not just us, I mean everybody, you know, everybody in this Kali Yuga. So it takes us some time. But it works so, so beautifully. So always doing, so Krishna says, just always doing what I say here. Get up and fight. Even other people also, let them do this, let them follow this with Shraddha. Let them not have that asuya, that type of pettiness and jealousy. And for them too, they will be liberated from all karmas. Om Tat Sat.
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.